Scientific.
It just got recorded for the podcast.
Oh, jeez. It just keeps getting better.
All right. So mine's going to be kind of different from every other one we've had so far. So what I'm looking at is chest kinematics and oxygen consumption in children with idiopathic scoliosis during steady state walking. Is this plugged in? Nope.
Yeah, undo that. Oh, so, yeah, there you go.
Turn it on.
Turn it on, I'll switch to the side.
Sweet. I'm sure most of you are familiar with scoliosis. We're looking at adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. It affects 2-3% of children between 10 and 16. And what's been found is that moderate to severe scoliosis can affect exercise capacity. So basically what's happening is you have this curvature of the spine that's affecting your chest wall, so your lungs can't expand as much. So it's just making it harder to breathe, harder to exercise, stuff like that. They've also found that oxygen consumption and energy requirements are higher in children with scoliosis. A lot of that's because of co-contractures of muscles in your abdominal cavity trying to stabilize the spine, but you know it's never going to be stabilized, so you have a lot of inadvertent muscle firing in your back. Normally, VO2 is measured using a metabolic cart, and those can be kind of intimidating for younger patients. You have, you know, like 10 to 16 is kind of the average age. So you're looking at kids that have this big machine with big mass coming over that can be quite scary for them. So what we're trying to do is use 3D motion analysis to kind of model their chest to see if we can use it kind of instead of a metabolic cart to measure oxygen consumption. Motion analysis has been shown to be valid compared to the metabolic cart as well. So the purpose of our study was to measure exercise capacity in children with scoliosis and compare them to a normal population. So we found, I'll get into that in a second, but so we're kind of comparing these patients with scoliosis and their exercise capacity, oxygen consumption to a normal population to see, you know, if it's truly higher or if it's not. And we're also looking to see if exercise capacity changes after spinal fusion surgery to kind of correct their spine. So what we're doing is we're measuring oxygen consumption at rest. So it's a 4-minute rest period, and there's a 10-minute walking bout on a treadmill, and then another 4-minute recovery bout. We have kinematic data for 15 seconds of every minute during each stage, and we're using visual 3D to do the 3D modeling of the chest. This is a picture of the marker set. You can see there's 41 markers, so it's there so we can separate each out. We have upper thorax, lower thorax, upper abdomen, and lower abdomen, so we can kind of separate each of those sections out. We've got them on the front and back to model the entire chest cavity. That way we can separate how much each portion of the body is actually contributing to oxygen consumption. What we found in kind of the preliminary results is there were no differences between the scoliosis patients and the normal patients. It was trending, but we had kind of a small sample size. We had about 15 of each. It trended, and it was very close to significant, but it didn't quite reach significance. We found that the percent of volume contributed by each section of the torso was pretty much the same. So for each section of the four, we found that the lower thorax was the biggest contributor, and then each one was a little less than that. We did find the tidal volume, so the amount normally inspired and expired, tended to be a little different between the two, but we could correct between 3D kinematic data and the metabolic cart. But we could correct that using regression. We found the offsets that we were able to correct for that and still accurately measure it, just, you know, having to do a little calculation to get there. So what we're doing now is we're doing the long-term follow-up. It apparently takes, according to some of the doctors that I work with, 12 to 18 months to get back to 100% where you were before surgery. This is a major surgery, a spinal fusion surgery, depending on the patient, you know, and the severity of their curve can take that long to get them back up to, you know, doing activities that they were doing before. Some of them, you know, end up being able to do more over that time, but you kind of have to build back up to it because, you know, they're cutting their back open and, you know, straightening their spine. It's pretty intense surgery. I thought about putting some pictures, but I figured I'd save you all. So what we're doing is we're doing a follow-up from, you know, pre-activity levels. We'll measure their 3D kinematics and their O2 consumption and then compare that with 6 months and 12 months. We're trying to extend the IRB to 18 months after talking to some of the doctors, but right now we're at 12 months and we have a few patients, but it is a pretty long study, so we've had some dropout, surprise, surprise. But so that's where we are currently, is, you know, reassessing the data that we already have and doing these follow-up with the patients now.
So is the idea that the kinematic data replaces the
VO2
test?
Yes. So we are trying to get away from using the metabolic cart for this study. So we want to be able to put on the markers, put somebody on a treadmill for 10 minutes, and be able to assess their pulmonary function without having to hook them up to the metabolic cart. So if we have, you know, 4 or 5-year-old that needs pulmonary function testing, we can just do this test, which is a lot simpler, and, you know, it's just walking on a treadmill. It's not very scary for most kids.
Is that a max test or just 10?
No, it's a 10-minute walk test.
What do you do about, or how do you account for, like, all the artifacts you're going to get based on body type? So if you have markers on the stomach, if someone has a lot of adipose tissue in the area, you're going to get a lot of jiggle.
Yeah, there's...
Is that true?
Yeah, it's a skin movement artifact, yeah.
It's been a rough morning, thanks.
Kate took biomechanics to Dr. Polk, she knows.
I know it's like artifacts.
So scoliosis tends to have a leaner population in general because of all the extra energy consumption through just, you know, trying to be upright.
Yeah.
So we don't have an obese population as the normal population, but there's not a lot you can do. You can try to account for it and try to smooth out some of the data, but, you know, there's no getting rid of it all.
So is this just like a simpler data collection and setup, or do kids really not want to do a VO2 test?
They don't want to do a VO2 test. I mean, we do them at work quite often with CP patients, but, you know, you have to put the cart. Well, we have a portable unit, so it has the straps on it, and you still have to wear a mask, and that mask is kind of can be intimidating, and it scares a lot of the patients. But, you know, it's something we kind of insist on so we can get a measure of their oxygen consumption and O2 cost. You know, if we can do this for scoliosis patients, it may be applicable to other populations as well. So we may be able to do, you know, something like this for CP patients, just put them on a treadmill instead of having them, you know, walk with our Met cart that's going to be heavier, so it's going to add to what they're having to do as well.
Do they ever use this? I mean, I don't know if it's that valid, but the impedance detectors, you know, the things that go around the body and measure, like, stretching and relaxing. Do they use that for respiratory analysis?
I don't know.
Because you see, like, in some people that work out, they put those on and they measure. I just don't know how accurate they are. But that might be another approach.
Yeah.
Or maybe together with it to help out with it, see if they work.
Yeah.
What about how complex the scoliosis subjects were? I mean, this is a thoracic scoliosis.
Yeah. All of them are ambulatory, so we're not, you know, they are.
So there's a convexity and a concavity on their thoracic. Did you try to break up the side of the chest wall movement based on whether it's on the concave side or the convex side? See if the movements were different?
We did not.
Sorry, you said that it was approaching significance, and I was wondering if it looks like if you have more subjects, you might get there. But
yeah.
But I would suspect one side being stiffer than the other, possibly.
Yeah. And, you know, that all depends on the patient. Some patients have stiffer curves and less apt to correction than other patients. So, you know, that may also play into it. But I'll have to look and see, you know, if we can take a look at the data and see.
You almost wonder if these new biometric type of suits that everybody's, you know, you see them advertised, I don't know how expensive they are, if that might be possible down the line and cheap enough to actually use.
One of the big things so I work over at Shriners, and we have the motion analysis lab. So we've got a 12-camera set up in a pretty big space to do this in. So we already had all the equipment. It was more of just a different application of the equipment. We didn't have to spend the money, but, you know, that might be an option later on down the line. Something completely different than any of the presentations for you.
Okay.